You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my special co-host this week, sitting in for Dr. Brian McCarty, Dr. Bindu Bamara.
Hello, how are you?
Good, Bindu.
I am much better looking than Dr. McCarty.
No doubt. Well, I'm not saying no doubt, because he's coming back next week. I think it's exactly even, Bindu. It's exactly even. Our special guest in studio, Chad Altschaffel. Close?
Altschaffel, yeah.
Altschaffel. Man, that's a tough one for me. I even wrote it down twice. Chad, how are you? Thanks for coming in.
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Hey, let's talk about some of the injuries in the NFL. What's nice for us, Dr. Bindu, is you were part of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Correct.
And with the Packers in the off and bye week, let's talk a little bit about some of the injuries and how NFL teams kind of utilize that bye week to try to get these guys back on the field. Can we start with Eddie Lacy? Because he's on my fantasy football team, and he's very disappointed in me.
Yeah, he's on one of mine, too, and I'm struggling in that league. The bye week is obviously a huge advantage for athletes, especially of that caliber. 2 weeks off can make a huge difference in amount of swelling and recovery that athletes of that caliber can make. You know, generally, we like to get athletes who injure themselves back on the field when they're relatively pain-free, have minimal swelling, have near full range of motion, and restore their strength to about 80 to 90% of their normal other side. And 2 weeks for guys like that with the advanced athletic training techniques that they have can really restore almost all those factors quickly.
You know, I was listening to the Big Show, and Gary Ellison, who played running back in the NFL, made a comment that kind of jumped off a little at me. He said, look, one of the problems, and he in fact talked about Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, he said, you guys don't believe me, let's call the Mosh guys. He said the fact that he is heavier and a little bit out of shape is affecting his comeback from this ankle sprain.
I would agree with that definitely. You know, certainly things like being in shape, which is putting less weight on your leg, can make a big difference. Nutrition and other factors can certainly help you heal faster. You know, even for the common person out there, if they were to smoke, for example, it really does slow down healing and limit your ability to get back to your best performance.
Hey, before we get more into the NFL, I've got a quick question for you. There's a 13-year-old nephew of mine that got hurt playing football and tore his ACL. And at 13, I'm wondering, and this is right in your wheelhouse, I'm wondering at that age, is it too early to have ACL surgery?
Yeah, first of all, it's a devastating injury for anybody, but it's certainly at that age. I would never say too early. Now, at that age, it definitely does bring in certain other factors, the most important thing being that the bone has not fully grown yet. There are what we call growth plates around the knee. When we typically fix an ACL injury in an adult athlete, we basically have to drill through where the growth plates are. In a 13-year-old, depending on what the exam and the x-rays show and the bone maturity of the patient, we might have to use different techniques, which might not be as good as an adult reconstruction. The risk is if you do an adult-type reconstruction in a 13-year-old and you go through the growth plate, you can actually hinder or inhibit or arrest the growth of that leg.
Right.
And you can end up with either a shorter leg or one leg longer than the other, or deformity where the leg kind of grows bow-legged or something to that effect.
So this young man's parents need to be extremely careful on this and understand that the doctors that they're working with, hopefully I would assume understand that and pretty common knowledge. I know from working with you guys that the last thing you want to do is surgery.
Correct.
The last thing that here's, let's try this or look at this or try this or look at that, and if nothing else, then let's go in and fix it.
Yes. Now, in this situation, though, I don't think he has a choice.
He
has to have surgery. Now, I will tell you, in my opinion, it needs to be fixed because the risk of not fixing it, he can actually do more damage to his knee, meaning he can start chipping off cartilage at the end of his bone. He can tear a meniscus. He could potentially tear other ligaments, which could even be worse for his knee long term.
Right.
So it might require different techniques, and it might require, you know, a way of fixing it now and then having it revised or redone 5 to 10 years later, potentially, because the technique at 13 might not be as good.
Do you see many kids at that age, doctor?
13 is a little young. You know, you certainly see them.
Yes.
Certainly probably about 5 to 10% of, maybe not 10%, more about 5% of what you treat for that injury is about that age group.
Wow. He is Dr. Bindu Bamarai. You can check out his information, mymosh.com. And if you have any questions that you want to get answered today, you can tweet us at #SportsMedRadio. #SportsMedRadio. Dr. Bindu Bamarai will be able to answer those. Let's get back, if we can, to the NFL. Jamal Charles, it would be a devastating injury for him.
Yeah, a second ACL injury is very difficult. Now, one ACL injury, people were pretty good at getting people back to near their level performance. A second one is much more difficult. It requires, depending on how it was fixed the first time, you can't use the same graft source, meaning a hamstring or a patellar tendon, which then requires either taking one from the other knee or taking a different muscle or tendon. And every time you do that, you're going to, you know, weaken the leg in theory. Or you have to use a cadaver or what's called an allograft, which is a dead person's tissue to make the new ligament. And there is a little bit of slightly higher failure rate in that situation as well. Also, given the fact he's, I think, 31, 32 years old, a little bit older, and what he does for a living requires agility and quickness. That's going to be a difficult one to come back from.
You know, 31 might be old in the NFL, but not in the radio business.
No, or physician business.
Yeah, or
we're just starting at 31.
That's it. Just hitting your peak in the radio business, and it's all, well, hopefully it's not all downhill from there. A couple of the other Packers that I think this bye week is really big for, Adams, the receiver that, you know, did not dress, and this high ankle sprain has really given him problems.
Yeah, high ankle sprains is different than the regular ankle sprain. The regular ankle sprain, the typical ankle sprain is a few ligaments on the outside at the end of your fibula bone. The high ankle sprain actually involves ligaments that go from the fibula to the tibia and can go all the way up to near the knee area. So it involves a significant higher energy force injury, which takes a significant amount of time to heal. So, he's missed 2-3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and when he tried to go, he went one series and shut it down.
Right. So I would typically, on average, tell you a regular ankle sprain, a player could miss 1 to 2 weeks, where in a high ankle sprain, it typically would be a 4 to 6 week injury in general.
You know, Randall Cobb is another one with the shoulder. And he said, look, I probably won't be 100% until the off season where I can just give it as much rest as it needs. But this bye week is good for him.
Yeah, big difference. I think it's grade 1 or grade 2 AC injury that he has after four weeks and the 2 weeks off will be significantly better. So I think we'll see a big difference in his production.
Hey, before we get to a break, can we talk a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school?
Yeah, well, I grew up locally in the Delafield area. I went to the Heartland Arrowhead School District, and then I went to Marquette High School. Then went to college in Kansas City, Missouri, at a school called Rockhurst College, which was a Jesuit school, which recruited me from Marquette High School.
Sure.
Came back here in Milwaukee with the Medical College of Wisconsin, did my medical college training there, then did orthopedic residency at the Medical College of Wisconsin, did 1 year sports medicine fellowship back in Kansas City with the Chiefs and two doctors who were the main Chiefs team doctors.
That's awesome.
And then I came back home, basically.
Are you a Royals fan? You
gotta be. I'm not a Royals fan, but I am happy for my friends in Kansas City.
There you go.
And I'm happy to see that a small market team can do it. So it gives me hope maybe someday before I die that the Brewers can make it.
Yeah, no doubt. You and me both, brother. You know, on the other side of break, we're going to talk about trying to get athletes back on the court, back on the field as quick as possible. And one of the reasons that we brought Chad in, before we get into Chad, we talked a little bit before the show. Radio is something in your blood a little bit. You did some radio, huh?
I did. I was with 93 QFM my senior year in college. I was Buckley the intern.
Buckley the intern.
Yeah.
And you still graduated from college and everything.
I did, barely.
Yeah, that QFM station had quite the reputation, my friend.
It did.
And it lived up to it.
It did.
And then after, in college, you also did some radio?
I did. I had my own show in college for a year, and my partner was Kevin Bartelt, and we did kind of a combination of sports, and we did a little rebroadcasting without the NFL's written permission on some games. But it was only 5 watts, so I think we were okay.
You got a great voice for radio. You know, we might need to. We're going to talk about doing some voice work for us after the show. I think that would be outstanding. And again, before we get to a break, let's talk a little bit about Chad. Has had two surgeries with you. In fact, he was kind enough to show me one of them. I thought, look, he said, "Do you want to see it?" And I said, "Yeah." I thought it was like right after he did it, but. No, I never want to see that picture again. I got to be honest with you. Can we talk about what the surgeries that Chad has had?
Yeah, so Chad, the reason I brought him in is first of all, he's an incredible athlete, played collegiate level baseball and football, and obviously still a great athlete today. He's a very low handicap golfer, I should say, and very motivated to play. Sure. So I got a call one night. 3-4 years ago, I can't remember exactly, and he goes, "I think my leg blew up." Ah. It was an incredible amount of pain, and we went through, you described, he goes, "I think it was my calf or my Achilles."
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, come on, he couldn't have done it," and then he came in the next day, and sure enough, he tore his Achilles tendon. So we went through, we fixed it, and, you know, against doctor's advice, he started playing golf for 2 months. So I thought he'd be a guy who is a good example to bring in here to show what somebody who's in great shape, who's a great athlete, but also highly motivated can do to get back from an injury, which typically takes 6 months to get back from at 2 months.
We will we'll talk to Chad. The other one was a home improvement injury, and we'll get to that. Remember, right after the show, it's the Milwaukee Nary Home Improvement Show
go.
On Sports
right,
Radio 105. Yeah, we might keep you over on that one and talk about why guys shouldn't do that kind of work on their own. We'll do it. On the other side of the break, if you have any questions, you can tweet us, hashtag SportsMedRadio. There's a number of things we're going to talk about. In fact, segment three, PRP is what we're going to talk about. Correct, Doctor?
Yeah, platelet-rich plasma and bone marrow aspirate are two of the hottest things probably in medicine today, orthopedics today. Non-operative treatment for things like tendonitis, tears, ligament tears that we're investigating and trying to do more of.
You know, doing some of the research that I did, and we're talking about like tennis elbow, golfers elbow, jumper's knee, that kind of stuff, how people are utilizing this rather than having surgery, correct?
Yes, exactly.
And we're going to talk about that in segment three, and I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a very interesting topic. You're listening to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's Days Gone by Eastern Sun, brought to you by our special in-studio guest, Chad Aushoffel.
Man, I'm close.
Much better.
Thank
much
you.
Better,
yeah. I've
much
been
more
practicing.
Fluid on that.
Chad Aushoffel. There, he screwed it up the second time. Hey, we're talking about trying to get athletes back on the field or on the course with Chad as quick as possible. Tell us how you ruptured your Achilles, and how did you do that?
I was playing platform tennis or paddle tennis out at the Cedar Club in Cedarburg, and it was actually my very first night on the court. My first league match.
Oh.
And it was about 10 o'clock at night. I'd been playing all night, and it was one more set, and I would be done, and it happened.
Do you know, I've got a friend of mine that did that playing basketball, and they talk about he thought somebody shot him.
That's exactly the first thing that went through my mind.
Is somebody, thought somebody shot you. At a paddle tennis place in Cedarburg, that's probably not going to happen.
Well, it's kind of wooded. You know, there is some hunting land probably not too far away, and that was a stray bullet. That had to be it.
And you
think of anything else.
And you went down.
Yeah.
Very difficult to get your car. Hard to get home?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when it happened, of course, the people I'm playing with are telling me, "Oh, you just pulled a muscle. You're good. Don't worry about it. You know, you'll be fine." And I'm having a beer with them afterwards, and about 5 minutes into that, I'm practically eating my cup because I'm in so much pain. And I decided to go home, and it was my left, so I could at least drive. But halfway there, I mean, I'm seeing stars, and
oh my,
and didn't know if I was going to make it. And when I did get home, I literally crawled on my hands and knees from the garage to our bedroom, and woke up my wife, and I said, I think I tore my Achilles. I got to call Bindu.
So, and typically patients will tell you that it felt a huge pop, like, you know, describing the gunshot wound experience, or gunshot sound experience.
Sure.
You know, so that's exactly what you people hear, is you hear a big pop and then just swelling at the back of your calf. And then about a few minutes to a few hours later, the swelling comes in, and that's when the pain really will kick in.
You know, before we get into the procedure and how he did after, was he like the model patient, right? He listened to everything you had to
well,
say.
And that's kind of why I want to bring him in. Part, you know, certainly I would not tell patients that they could be golfing 2 months after an Achilles tendon repair. But, you know, obviously he's a great example of somebody who can push the limit and did very well with that.
Well, he's obviously really physically fit, you know, takes care of his body, and that had a lot to do with him being able to get back.
Yeah, certainly. You know, like we talked about with Eddie Lacy, being in shape, nutrition, you know, doing the proper rehab with physical therapy. You know, I'm a sports medicine physician, but I'll be the first to tell you that I'm only as successful as my athletic trainer and my physical therapists are.
Yeah, it's
because
a team.
In some ways, the surgery is the easiest part for patients. After that, it's the rehab. And you really do rely on your athletic trainers and your physical therapists to get your patients back to where they need to be.
You know, this is maybe an odd question, but when you're performing surgery on a guy who's a really good friend of yours, nerves different? Anything different for you? Do you know?
No, I you know, you almost have to think about it when you're in the surgery. You know, you put the drapes on, you don't see the person's face. You don't.
Right.
You're thinking about, I have this thing I have to fix.
Yeah, I lobbied hard to watch the surgery if there was some way.
You're a freak. I just met you. Well, don't take offense to that.
And knowing him and knowing how he was, I know he'd want to see pictures of his leg.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had the nurse take pictures, which, as long as we get consent from the patient, is okay to do. So we got pictures, and then we emailed him through HIPAA compliant methods, the pictures.
Good. Well, and I appreciate you showing me that picture. When he said, "Do you want to see a picture of it?" I thought it was that night that he did it, the swelling. But no, he showed me a picture mid surgery, which I never ever want to see that. It's in my head for the rest of my life. When you got out of Chad, when you got out of surgery, how long? Like, first of all, with a surgery like that, how long are you in the hospital for?
It was just an outpatient.
Yes, right? It's an outpatient surgery, so you don't. And that's another big thing, which is another topic. But a lot of, you know, today's world, very few surgeries now are people are staying overnight, other than maybe joint replacement or severe fracture. We can do almost all, certainly sports medicine procedures, as outpatient, meaning they go home the same day.
That's really actually quite amazing.
Yeah.
I had in high school, and again, this is a million years ago, but all I had was what they call the joint mouse. Cartilage had that, and it floated.
Yeah,
and had it taken. He said, "Look, I don't know where it is, and I won't because it floats. So I'm going to cut here. If it's not there, I'm going to cut here."
Yeah.
Well, where he cut the first time, it was right there. Took it out, but I was in the hospital like 4 days or something.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because when I started my residency back in 1996, the hospital wards were full of patients with fractures and traction, and then things changed quickly over my last 5 years. There, the last year I was there, they were empty. You know, ankle fractures were outpatient.
Right.
Everything was done so differently in even that 5 year period.
Hey, Chad, how quick after did they want to get you up walking? And I mean, that day or?
No, I was casted for probably, I don't know, 3-4 days.
Well, I put him in a splint. You know, we don't want to put a cast right away because of swelling. So
right.
We have to allow swelling to occur. And then what the biggest concern with an Achilles, specifically Achilles tendon repair, is the wound. There's a little risk of the wound not healing correctly. So you want to kind of minimize the swelling for the first week with some compression with a splint. So strict, you know, trying to elevate as much as possible, keep it above your heart, anti-inflammatories and pain medication if needed. And then generally we'll take the splint off in a week, look at the wound. If that looks good, then we'll start the rehab process.
Okay, if you have any questions for either one of our guests, you can't ask QFM questions, but other than that, hashtag SportsMedRadio. Hashtag SportsMedRadio. That'd be funny. Hey, Bucky, do you remember this?
Probably not.
Yeah, but he does not. Hashtag.
I don't think those people are up right now.
No, they. I don't think so either.
Or they're still up.
Or they're incarcerated. One of them.
Yeah, and still up. Because hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get any questions that you have. Chad, the toughest part of the first surgery that you had was what?
It was being immobile. I was on crutches. I couldn't really, I couldn't be myself or do anything. I had a 2-year-old son who didn't quite understand why I couldn't do certain things. So, that was tough, but it was the first major injury like that I'd ever had. So it was a little, eye-opening as far as something like that could happen.
First major injury through, and you played multiple sports growing up, played 2 sports in college, 4 years?
Four years
each, and the first was playing table tennis or what, not table tennis, platform tennis.
Ping pong injury. Yeah,
ping pong is a major.
That'd be in the eye.
It's almost kind of funny, I have to be honest with you, with playing outside linebacker and free safety in college football, nothing.
Yeah, no, a broken pinky. I did have a minor medial collateral tear, but no surgery. That was just to immobilize it for a couple weeks.
In the rest of the time we have, Dr. Bindu, when somebody has this kind of surgery and they're able to get back on the golf course in 2 months, that's incredible to you.
Yeah, I was, to be honest, shocked. I thought there's no way he could do it. I just thought, with the pain and the swelling after 3 or 4 holes, let alone 18 holes, would hurt and limit your ability. But he did very, very well.
What was the mindset the first time you went back and played? Because I think with a lot of these injuries, and the more I'm learning about this stuff, Chad, a lot of it is mental and not so much physical. When the doctor says, look, we think you're ready to go, but in your mind, I'm wondering that first round of golf.
Well, I think it really comes down to, obviously the doctor has to perform the surgery well and get the structure and everything back in place, but it really comes down to your frame of mind and, as Dr. Bindu said, how motivated you are. And, I had this Ryder Cup week-long golf thing, planned, and I told him right off the bat, I said, I'm not missing it. I'm gonna make it, and that's what it comes down to. You if you keep yourself in shape and you have the right frame of mind, and you follow your, physical therapist's orders, you can do this.
Did you hit a bucket before he went?
No, I flew down there and walked out onto the range on the same day I was going to play and kind of took a few ginger swings and just said, hey, I'm here, I'm gonna play.
Did it swell up after the first round?
It might have a little bit, nothing that I really noticed. You have to kind of listen to your body and make sure you don't push it too much, and I was okay
off the tee. In the fairway, did you feel it on a different on any shots more than others?
Well, where I felt it is if I wasn't in the fairway and I had to climb up a hill or something like that. That's when you could feel the limitation of your flexibility, and that's when you kind of would notice it.
I would have felt it through the whole round. I don't get anything in the fairway.
I still feel it now.
Really?
I'm very rarely on the fairway, that's why.
Really quickly, the second injury that you had was home improvement. What happened?
It was. I was working on a miter saw, cutting some trim for my basement and not paying attention, and I lifted a piece of trim away from the saw and put my finger right into the blade.
Ah, that
didn't work out well.
Yeah, you wanted to show me a picture of that one, too. I did not.
Yeah, I had to refer him to one of our hand specialists to get that.
And what did he have done?
I think they had to put a stitch in a tendon. It's called the extensor tendon, the tendon that straightens out your finger so that it wouldn't tear and get worse. I think he only had a partial tear, though.
I've got 3 permanent stitches that will be there for the rest of my life. And I had the surgery on a Thursday, and then the following Thursday I was playing in another golf tournament.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's,
you are a
it's,
freak.
It's motivation. It
yeah.
Is.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's motivation. Yeah. Yes.
Well, you know what? Good for you. We really appreciate you coming in, Chad. We're going to keep you the second half of the show, and on the other side of the break, we're going to talk a little bit about PRP. And when you had sent me that email, Dr. Bomber, I had to say, give me more than that, because I have no idea what this is. But I've done some research. Platelet-rich plasma, correct?
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And boy, people are starting to utilize this quite a bit, and I've got a number of questions. And we'll start with what it is on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Bumper music brought to you by our special in studio guest. This is Sunrise by Boom Jenks.
That's correct.
Chad Aushaffle.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Boom Jenks. What kind of music is that? Is it club music?
It's club techno.
Yeah, club techno.
And you can thank Bindu. He got me hooked into that years ago. So
yeah, I figured having you in, we'd get that old QFM kind of stuff going. But yeah, Boom Jenks was not being played on QFM.
No. Bob Seger.
Yeah, I can tell you that right now. Hey, let's talk about, and again, this is it's really hot right now. And going online and doing some research on it, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on PRP therapy. Let's talk a little bit about what PRP stands for and what it is.
Yeah, so I would also include bone marrow aspirate. We can talk about both. But PRP stands for platelet-rich plasma. And what it is basically taking a patient's or a person's blood and drawing about 10 cc's of blood into a syringe, putting it into a centrifuge and spinning it. And what spinning it does is basically separates heavier components from lighter components. The idea is to separate the platelets out away from the red blood cells and the white blood cells that are in someone's typical blood. The idea is then also to take the platelets, and the platelets produces certain proteins called growth factors, or what they're called cytokines, which are basically chemicals that signal other cells to come in and heal. So what we want to do is take the platelets and the growth factors and cytokines, inject it into the area of injury, for example, a tennis elbow, and to encourage healing factors to come in. The idea is that concentrated platelets and the growth factors will help encourage healing of the tennis elbow injury site. You know, typically we've thought of tennis elbow as being lateral epicondylitis, and everybody knows itis means inflammation. The reality is what tennis elbow is and what a lot of tendonitis is are actually small micro tears of tendons. So instead of having a complete rupture, it's almost like the precursor of that, where you have small minor tears of a tendon. The idea of putting the platelet-rich plasma proteins in there is to encourage healing to come in and heal those micro tears so that the tendon heals, your pain goes away, and gets you back to a pain-free, highly functioning state.
How long has this been going on? From the research I did, it's been used in other areas for a while, and it's now made its way kind of into sports medicine.
Right. So, you know, certainly in the research world, it's probably been going on for, you know, several years, 15 to 20 years at least, I'm sure. And in Europe and other areas where they're not quite as regulated as we are in the medicine world, they can be a little more cavalier about doing some of these sort of newer techniques. In the sports medicine world, I would say we've been talking about it for 5 to 10 years, been trying to use it in different applications for the past 5 to 10 years. The biggest problem we're having is unfortunately getting it covered under insurance. We typically can use it in the operating room sense when we, for example, were to repair a rotator cuff. We can, if we feel like it needs it, we might be able to do a little PRP to enhance the healing if it's
right.
Necessary. But if you're doing it on a clinic basis, for example, for tennis elbow, right now we do struggle to get insurances to cover it, and it's pretty difficult sometimes for people to pay for it.
So as a standalone, you come in and get that done is where insurance. It surprised me a little bit, because wouldn't that prevent or this may then prevent the surgical process, which in long term would cost more money for the insurance, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and we could do a whole 5-hour show on insurance companies and health economics of medicine. I would agree with you, but obviously insurance companies, their job is to make money and to limit anything that costs. You know,
right.
And they're what they're going to claim is that there aren't enough science and research to prove that it's cost effective for them yet.
So let's go through the process again. The patient's own blood is drawn, and then it gets spun to separate the plasma, the red blood cells, and then you inject that right into the area that the tennis elbow or the jumper's knee or yeah. whatever we had talked about.
Right.
The entire process takes how long?
You know, I'd say a total 30 minute. The patient's in there for 30 minutes or so. So you come in, we draw the, you know, get you checked in, that sort of thing. Draw the blood. Then it takes about 15 minutes to spin the blood and then separate it out. It's a simple 2-second, basically take another syringe and take the top layer off. And then we go back and sterilely prepare the patient. You know, try and maybe do a little numbing injection first. Then inject the...
Yeah, we like that, by the way, don't we? Chad's laughing. Yeah,
it helps.
Yeah, it does. Not for him. He wants to see the whole thing, and he's a freak, but most of us.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we talk about jumper's knee, by the way, that's usually the thought of as patellar tendonitis, so a small micro tears on the patellar tendon by the knee.
Okay. When people have this done, what do they want to know what they can expect? Are you able to say, look, I feel pretty confident that by doing this, we can alleviate some of the pain? Or is it, hey, look, let's give this a shot, and if it's not, then we'll look at what we need to do on a plan B?
Right. It's you know, it's obviously going to be different for every person. There are some people who never want to have surgery, which is understandable. So we want to try and get them better, avoiding surgery, you know, in any way as possible, and this is always something we offer. But typically, when you have this done, it's not going to work overnight. Generally, when you first do it, you might get more swelling and pain just because we're basically calling new cells to come in and heal, which will cause a little bit more pain and swelling initially. Then we do recommend doing physical therapy afterwards for 4 weeks or so, 4 to 6 weeks depending, or do it on your own as long as you can do the same exercises on your own and you're motivated like Chad would be.
Right. Chad, it would take Chad 14 minutes to get back. How does somebody know if PRP is if this is right for them?
Well, it's one of those things you have to come in and see somebody and talk about it and, you know, present all the different options. First of all, you got to get the correct diagnosis. First and foremost, you got to see somebody, make sure you have tendinous elbow, make sure you have jumper's knee or one of the other things. That we talked about. And then once we get the correct diagnosis, then you got to develop a plan. We want to typically try physical therapy, anti-inflammatories first. If it works great, then you're going to get better. But if it doesn't work, and then you maybe do an MRI, check and confirm how bad the tendon is injured, and then consider options. You know, surgery is usually the last option we want to talk about. So we can offer other things like injections or PRP, or bone marrow aspirate, which is a little different but similar principles.
Can you explain that one to us real quick?
So the difference is in bone marrow aspirate, we're actually taking cells from the bone marrow, which are cells which are what we call undifferentiated cells, meaning when you were a child or a fetus, for example, your cells are undifferentiated. They then spread out to your body as you grow and become either muscle cells or bone cells or you know, brain cells or whatever cells they want. They become differentiated. So the idea is to take a bone marrow cell, which is still undifferentiated, and inject it into an area so that it can actually heal something that's missing. And so it turns into a cell that's missing, for example.
You know, I got to tell you a quick story. Last night on the Scoreboard Show, we had a guest that sat in. His name is Dylan Dooley. And he sent me a Facebook message a couple of weeks ago, and he said, look, I'm a former a football player at Cudahy High School. He's now a freshman at MATC. He had been battling Ewing's sarcoma.
Oh, yes.
And in his hip since December, went through bone marrow transplant, 2 months of intense radiation, and this is 10 days ago. Today I was told I'm cancer-free. It's been one crazy journey.
Yes.
And he said, hey, I just love the Scoreboard Show. Love to come in and sit in on that show one time. Oh. I said, come in. Are you kidding me? Come on in. Slapped a headset on. The kid was great.
Yeah.
But similar to what we're talking about, I think, he went through that.
Yeah. I mean, a little different. Obviously, treating him much, he's a much more serious condition, obviously. But similar ideas. You want to, you know, take, you know, cells. Basically, we're trying to heal areas that are injured by putting cells that are undifferentiated into that area. Now, where I think bone marrow aspirate has more of an application potentially than even PRP does is in patients with arthritis. Typically in a knee or a shoulder or any joint that has arthritis, you're missing cartilage. The smooth white cartilage I always describe is at the end of a chicken bone for a patient. That smooth white, it's almost frictionless surface.
Sure.
You know, when that wears down, that's what arthritis is. That's where you get the grinding and the pain. The idea is we want to try and restore that cartilage. And, you know, Dr. McCarty has been one of the leaders of this as well for our group. But certainly the idea of what we call joint restoration, we're trying to basically restore cartilage in people's knees, hips, shoulders that is missing cartilage. So the bone idea of taking bone marrow aspirate and these undifferentiated cells and turn them into cartilage cells is what's intriguing most of us in today's world.
So, Chad, when you guys just go out and have a cup of coffee, is this the kind of conversation you guys have together?
Yeah, we do. We sit around and
talk about bone marrow aspirate.
We brainstorm on the latest medical procedures.
And, Chad, you really are a freak, aren't you? And you want to go into some of these surgeries and just watch them, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, goodness.
Absolutely.
Again, if you want to tweet us any questions for our certainly in-studio co-host, Dr. Bindu Bamara, or our special in-studio guest, Chad, will answer all kinds of stuff if you need it answered. You can tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio. We'll continue our conversation with these guys on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Feel like just letting this play for a minute. This one I like, Chad.
I figured I had come up with something.
Something that I may have heard of. This is Seal, Flying Like an Eagle. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host this week, Dr. Bindu Bamara, our special in-studio guest, Chad Allshaffel. Want to say hi to Stephanie, his wife, and Blake, six-year-old Blake. Big time soccer player.
Yep.
Blake, you keep playing soccer, baseball. You play all those sports, Blake. Your father's very proud of you.
Yep. Good morning, little buddy.
Good morning, little buddy. That's awesome. Hey, Dr. Bindu, let's talk a little bit more, if we can, about some of the things that you guys are doing with the bone marrow aspirate. Is that, I guess not new, but trending like the other things that we had talked about? Do people come in and say, hey, look, tell me about PRP? I'm sure they don't, right?
Well, there are certainly some patients who do their research, you know,
right.
Do their Googling or whatever.
Or have a wife that's a nurse.
That would be good. Certainly there are, you know, there are always patients who are always challenging us, which is, trust me, a good thing. I mean, there's nothing better for me to have a patient ask me questions because obviously I love to talk about this stuff.
Sure.
Certainly you do get people bringing some kind of off the wall stuff too, which, you know, and, you know, some of the more nutrient type things, which
sure.
We don't always have scientific proof that work. And they'll ask questions, which is great. And it helps. I have to educate myself sometimes on some of the things because I can't hear of all of them all the time. And it's a great educational experience for me as well. But certainly patients will come in and ask about PRP and bone marrow aspirate. And certainly when somebody comes in having arthritis, they don't want to have a joint replacement unless they have to.
Right.
And whatever you can do to avoid it, we definitely want to offer them and try.
Hey, Chad, one of the reasons that we started doing the show and Dr. Brian McCarty came to me and said, look, we're different. Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, it's a different animal than people are used to. Since we've started doing the show, I've probably sent 6 or 7 people to either Dr. Brian or to other of the doctors, and they came back and said, wow, that's a different experience from the time I got there to the time I got done and all the way in between. I felt like these people actually cared about me and cared about it. It wasn't like I was a number, and I'm wondering your experience working with Dr. Bindu and the people at Mosh, really positive experience for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes without saying that I felt pretty comfortable with Bindu working on me. And when I had my finger injury just recently, and he referred me to Dr. Afsari,
I really enjoy him. He's a really good man. I've sent my boss's daughter went to. If I can, I didn't mean to stop you.
No, go right ahead.
She went to, got injured playing soccer. Went to a 24-hour clinic, emergency clinic,
yeah.
And they said, I'm not sure. And so went to her regular doctor, said, I think you're okay, but we need some time. Well, 3 or 4 or 5 days later, it was still swollen and hurting.
Yeah.
And I learned from doing the show, look, she's 12 or 10. You need to go see. And I sent her to a man, and he casted it up. He said, look, it's broke.
Yeah.
You know, and she said, I have not had that kind of experience where he really cared about my daughter. Like, he sat and talked to us and said, what about this? What about that? And just a gentle nature of him. So I'm familiar with Dr. Asfari, big fan of his.
Yeah, I was really trying to talk him out of the surgery on my finger. And he, you know, the first thing that he looked at is I had stitches from the emergency room visit. And he kind of cringed when he looked at that. And he was really more concerned about what they had done than what I did. So it was good. He explained it in detail, you know, makes you really understand what's at stake. And yeah, they do really care about you afterwards. You know, you get a card in the mail and, you know, get a couple of phone calls from them. So they want to make sure that you're,
right,
you're doing all right. So it's good.
It's interesting because when Mosh was put together, that was the idea. And Dr. Brian McCarty and I have talked about this a long time. And he said, look, we as a group wanted to make sure we had all our ducks in a row before we really went out and started to pound our chest as to what and who we are. And he said, we are ready to go now, and we have been for a while. And he said, I think that the group that we have care more about making sure that the patient gets back to where they need to be, whether it's through whatever process we go through. And he said the caring from the time you walk in the door to the time everything is done, whether it's a day or 6 months later, is what we care about.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, being a sports medicine trained physician, I never want to tell any person, athlete, weekend warrior that they can't play their sport again.
Right.
My goal is always to say, I will get you back to your pre-injury level of function of sports and other activities. So, you know, that is your goal. So, and certainly things like bone marrow aspirate, PRP, are things we're trying to do to get people back faster, maybe even better than surgery, potentially down the road. Certain famous athletes like Tiger Woods, Rafael Nadal have had PRP injections. Jonathan Lucroy had it this year.
Right.
Several baseball pitchers have had it, and when they've had partial ulnar collateral ligament tears to avoid Tommy John surgery. So I do believe that PRP, bone marrow aspirate, is certainly the wave of the future and will definitely be the new hot topic for a long time.
Guys, thank you very much. This has been a great hour. I really appreciate it. Stephanie and Blake, thank you for letting Chad come in. That was great. No more injuries, no more surgeries, no more pictures for me, I have to tell you.
You got it.
Dr. Bindu Bamarai, you can check him out, mymosh.com. Any information. Guys, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.